You ever wonder about the people in family photos or ever try to ask who these people really were? Every face is a narrow escape or a love story that almost didn't happen. Your family stories are hidden in plain view. You just haven't accessed it yet. There are versions of these rebels and dreamers before life told them who they needed to be. And I'm not talking about the shiny stories everyone knows. I'm talking about the soul-crushing experiences with heartbreaks and real loss. You gotta preserve these stories now. So contact thevietnamstorybank.com today. No polish, just raw, recorded, beautiful history that makes you sit up and hold your breath. We dig it all up, record it, and hand it back to you. Safe, unerased, untouchable, and unforgettable. Don't let silence have the last word. Go to vietnamstorybank.com today. Make sure your family's stories are recorded. Welcome to the Vietnamese podcast. We just hit record with Thuyen Do.
Thuyen Do, yes.
Thuyen Do. Fun fact, my Vietnamese name is Thuyen, but I never use it. This is the first time I publicly have ever said that. Nobody calls me that.
I'm going to call you Thuyen from now on.
Thuyen and Thuyen. I mean, it's the same name, right? One is Yo Sak, one is Yo Yo Huyen.
Yeah. I think my mother named me after Tan Thuyen.
Tan Thuyen, the singer.
The singer. I think she loved her. Mm. Yeah.
Wow. It's cool. That's a cool fun fact. Well, welcome to the podcast. We're here.
Hello. I'm so happy to be here. I'm like super happy to be here.
Oh, why? Tell me why you're happy to be here. I want to hear it.
Why I'm happy to be here. Well, First of all, like, I like you a lot, as in I like your energy. I think everything you're doing for the community is amazing and it's bringing people together. And I'm just like, yeah, I just want to have a chat with you, to be honest.
Oh, I appreciate that. I wasn't expecting that. I was expecting something else in my head. I was like, okay, what are you ready to talk about, right? Like in my mind, I wasn't ready for that. That sounded so egotistical of me to ask you like, oh, whoa, why are you? I didn't expect it to come out that way. But thank you. That's I really appreciate that. And I'm going to receive that. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
So, Thuyen, how did you end up in England?
How did I end up in England? So the story is my mother put my eldest brother on a boat by himself post 75. And I'm the youngest of seven. So he at the time had five siblings because I hadn't been conceived at that point. And he luckily ended up being picked up by a British tanker, then taken to Hong Kong and ended up in a Save the Children orphanage in England when he was...
How old was he?
He was 12, 13 at the time. So he was here in England along with many other children who had made the journey without their parents. For about 5 years by himself.
And we're here to talk about you, but I think this is going to take a quick detour about your brother.
Yeah, of course.
He is he has to be either very amazing or super traumatized where he can't do anything in his life. I can't imagine being 12 and going on this journey by, like, what can you describe a little bit about him?
I mean, he's very Hien, but he's very funny. He has like a very fun sense of humor. He's 15 years older than me. So yeah. I only know him as Anhai, and all I know is that he likes to drink he used to drink and smoke. He likes that. And he used to and he was very funny. He made jokes a lot. And in our house, actually, that's how we function. Literally, they're always taking the piss out of each other all the time.
And does he ever talk about like that,
that harrowing 5 years of being by himself?
No. I did interview him, but he did speak about the racism that he suffered whilst he was at school here. And he because there was a network of Vietnamese kids around about his age, they were very close. And I think the letters, he wrote a lot of letters to my mother, and my mother said that she was always writing letters to him, telling him to stay on track, you know, all of that sort of stuff being good. And he did his like A-levels here. I don't know what it is in the US, but he was one of the first. Yeah, he graduated with a first, which is like the top grade in mathematics at university. I don't know how he did it, but yeah, I mean, yeah, he is, of course, I think he is traumatized, but of course he doesn't talk about it.
You know, I have a theory about these people who are 1.5. He's the 1.5 generation. Mm-hmm. Oh no, actually he's first generation. I mean, if we really get technical, but when you come that early, you had a taste of like how really bad it was in the early days, yeah, in the 70s. You grew up in that. And then you come here, or you come to England, and you have this opportunity, and you, oblivious to what is really going on in society, all you know is you have like all these people depending on you. And so you become this person who really does what they have to do, and then they really kick some butt. But I want to know how you are affected, or if at all, you looked at what he did and his life, and did that inform any of the decisions that you made when you were coming up?
Well, I mean, we're actually, it's funny because we bookend the seven, yeah? So he's the eldest, yeah, and I'm the youngest. And I think we are quite close spiritually, as in, I don't know, we don't talk very much, but I feel there's quite a strong connection between the two of us. I was always very aware of his sacrifice, is what my mother would say. She would always tell us to, you know, be kind to your brother, because he's you know, because of everything he's been through. And that was all the way through my childhood. And it was easy because he was very, very nice. He was a very nice big brother. I unconsciously, you know, a lot of my decisions weren't conscious. I always knew that I probably was an artist underneath. But I did everything that I thought was expected of me until about my late 20s. And that was when I changed my direction into, you know, being confident enough to pursue a career in the arts. But up until that point, I did everything my mother expected of me. So I did all my schoolwork. I went to university. I began a course in computer science because she was convinced that that was where all the money was. And he had done computer science. So all my brothers had done computer science, but I was terrible at it. So I did finance. But to be honest, all through university, I slept my way through. I didn't go to any lectures. I think I was kind of quite depressed, but I didn't know, because I didn't know how to function in life, really. Because I was, even though I'm the youngest of seven, I'm quite different. I'm like, there's quite a big gap between me and the next one. So there's a difference. I came when I was four, and my sister closest to me came when she was eight. And, you know, the difference between four and eight is huge in a child,
yeah,
to come to a country. So I think I don't have any memories of Vietnam, like none at all. And I, all I have are is like stories and what I feel like, you know, what I grew up with. And I suppose it's affected us in different ways, me and my big brother. I don't have the memories, but I somehow have absorbed a lot of it, all of the trauma, just by watching, because I was a watcher. And yeah, I'm not really answering your question, but
no, you did though, in a very perfect roundabout way, because I'm not really here to know about your brother. I'm here to know about how you perceive the world through how you're going to describe your brother. And I think you did a perfect job of explaining it.
It's so funny because the play I wrote about this Vietnamese family, the first scene I wrote was inspired actually by a Vietnam War vet who came over, who had become a monk, and he'd come over, and my acting teacher had organized this weekend of meditation with this Vietnam War vet. And it, within this meditation, he was talking about people who had PTSD, the soldiers who had PTSD, and how they would walk in a square, like sleepwalk and walk in a square, because that was the space they had whilst they were imprisoned. And because my father was also in a re-education camp for 5 years, whilst I was growing up, I knew that there was like he'd had nightmares and things like that. So I had, that was the scene that I wrote. The first scene was about this, the daughter coming home and discovering her father sleepwalking. And then the play grew, I had trouble like turning it into a whole like story. So you can get lots of scenes, but when you're writing a play, you need to sort of puzzle it out so that you have a narrative, right? And for ages, I didn't know how to do it. And then I don't know why I hadn't really thought about this before. I just suddenly thought to myself, I'm going to have to write it, aren't I? And I wrote the scene of my mother putting my brother on the boat. So, and that was somehow I just sort of, you know, the whole play itself took 7 years, but I think I was just like doing this and like, you know, trying to make sense of stuff.
Yeah.
Really?
You know, I want to ask you, when you are coming from this purgatory of computer science and you're in your 20s, your early 20s, and you're thinking to yourself, like, I have something inside of me. Like, I guess I'm asking for myself, but I'm also asking for like audiences who want to step into more creative endeavors and expression. And then even just for people who are fans of yours, that where do you, I guess my question is like, where do you find that launch, that energy to really propel you to say, you know what? I know that this is like murky waters. The next few years is going to be weird, but I need to like do this. Like what point in your life do you say, I got to step off the ledge and do this?
I think it reveals itself to you. I don't think there is a point that you, there isn't like a like it's going to be different for everybody. And it's one step at a time. I think one of the things that I'm very thankful for in terms of my own personality is that I don't think too much into the future. Mm. I did think in terms of I need some sort of stability, like I said, like some sort of financial stability, which is why, you know, I ran the restaurant with my sister for a while. So I did finance, and then I did 6 months of training to be an accountant and was again terrible at it. And then my sisters asked me if I was interested in running a restaurant with them. And I said, okay, because I'd grown up in the restaurants business. And I thought I knew that if it was successful, I could, you know, earn some money and become independent, which I was desperate for. I was so desperate to become independent from because I was living it with my parents at the time, and I just really wanted to be able to go out and do my own thing. And so it was during that whilst working at the restaurant, there were a lot of actors and writers that used to come in, and directors, and I would chat to them and like be like all night, you know, all my fun stuff.
Yeah.
And then one day someone said to me, if you're interested, you should just go and try it. You should just go and train. And I think I was 26 at the time. So then I just enrolled without really thinking I'm going to make a career out of this. It was like, I'm going to try. And I just enrolled in a adult education. I suppose you would say community college, like an adult drama class. At that point, yeah. I'd never, ever, ever done any drama or anything like that in my life. But I knew I wanted to. I knew that I wanted to learn how to speak because, like, I was very, very nervous speaking in public. So nervous that even when I was doing my kind of presentation to my tutorial group at university, I couldn't do it. I started to cry and shake.
Wow.
It was that bad. And there was only six people in the room. So it was actually like, I'm like I have a lot of, you know, yeah, I suppose what I know now about myself is that I'm very sensitive. So I suppose a lot of what I suffered from at university was sort of overwhelmed, and growing up, I was just overwhelmed by things. And it's not necessarily that I was scared. It was just that somehow emotionally I just shut down. And so I knew that I needed something to open myself up,
to get over it.
So that was it, really. I was really, really trying hard to get over a really like a hurdle, which was like this internal hurdle of not being able to speak. And I don't know where that came from, because it could have come from the first 4 years of my life. It could have just come from being the youngest of seven. It could be come from being, you know, Vietnamese in a different country. Who knows where it came from? It was there, if you know what I mean.
Do you feel like you've conquered it?
I think I've done a really good job. I wouldn't say conquer it, because I'm still very nervous.
You know, for all the people that are listening who don't know what you do, I mean, you're an actress. Yeah. And to go from not being comfortable at all and crying in class or before class and being unable to present, to the point where you're putting out all of this impressive work in your industry, in the entertainment industry, is a huge jump. I can't imagine the strength that it takes to really cross over and perform like that, you know? Because when I think about having to grow like that, like when you're like performing and you have to remember lines, and I think like your nerves take over and you forget. And so, you know, I question, like, where are you today with, if you're nervous, and how do you control all of that?
Well, you see it as a big jump because we're talking about it, but it's not. It's like, it's literally micro steps, you know? So the first, you know, it's the same, I suppose, when you have a phobia, and what do they call it?
A phobia?
Yeah.
A fear of something?
No, like they call it, what do they call it? When you're slowly introduced to something. slowly, a little bit by little bit, and then you get you sort of start to overcome your phobia.
It's,
I guess I see it a bit like that, where you especially with drama. That's why I think drama is such a good tool for young kids, or like it's really great tool for learning how to communicate and just it slowly, like it's a slow process, and through the craft helps you build tools in order to focus outside of yourself rather than inside of yourself. So the nervousness comes when the energy, the focus is on yourself. And my whole journey, especially with the acting, is to focus outside of myself, and nothing is about me. It's not about me. Does that make sense? So like none of the performances are about me. Nothing I write is about me. It's not about me. It's about, it's all coming from outside.
But ironically, everything is about you.
I know. Ironically, it is. But, you know, but in order to cope with it, does that make,
It makes sense.
With that level of anxiety, that's what I've had to, I've learned how to do. I mean, I started off dancing, as in like when I was like, when I was six, my sister, because someone had said to my mom, oh, you know, you should take her to dance class. And so my elder sister took me to dance class at the age of six once. And I really loved it. But then she didn't take me again. So no one took me again. Until I was like, and then when I turned 11, I went to secondary school. I met a girl who went to that dance school, and I went, oh, can I follow you? So I just started going by myself. By the time I was old enough, I went by myself. And because, you know, people were like helping refugee kids at the time, it was very cheap, you know. So it was £1 a class for me. And my mum just let me go. I was like dancing 8 hours a week, and I was going by myself until we moved house, and then I had to stop going. But I think the acting, like the dancing, is physical memory. You're like, a lot of it is physical memory and focus. And that's how I do it.
This is perfect segue into my question. Like, I have a huge question about the four hats that you see the headlines about. You is actor, playwright, novelist, and director. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like you wear a lot more hats in your life, I'm sure. But each of those titles, actors, novelist, playwright, director, each has its own really professional track. And each one has its own sort of like characteristics of becoming like really good and professional and proficient at it. But how can you wear all four and be so well known for being pretty good at all four? Like, what is the similarity? What is the tissue that connects?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't call myself a director. So you can take that one away. Then there's three, right? And they all stem from acting. So so much of, I've always wanted to write, I'm sure, as a child. So writing is quite natural to me. The acting, I concentrated on a lot because I really wanted to get very good at it. Like, I'm still working on it. Like, it's a lifetime's pursuit. So one of the things with the acting, the particular, my teachers were very much, they were they were very much of the camp of you are independent artists, actors. You learn how to write your own things. You learn how to make work yourself. And I found that very liberating. And through the sort of knowing how to improvise, it was natural for me to then improvise scenes. And then I just had to learn how to put them together to make a play, which took me a long time. You know, that took a long time for me to learn. And then in terms of like the prose, that was just another thing I had to learn. I had to, when someone approached me to turn the play into a novel, I was really scared, but I said yes. And then I went and like read books on writing prose and writing novels, and I read a bunch of novels, and then I threw them all away and just tried to get to the end of the book that I was writing. So I think they all come from the same place, which is a real fascination with what motivates people, real fascination of like stories and. I wouldn't say stories because I'm just really fascinated with human behavior.
Yeah. What? Why did somebody come to you to ask you to adopt it from a play to a novel?
It was during COVID, and really, I really didn't think that I would. Maybe I did actually. Maybe I had manifested it, but I hadn't like said it out loud. But it was during COVID, and a young editor at a publishing house just contacted me out of the blue and said that they'd read my script, they'd read my play, and thought it would make a great novel. Would I be interested? And I said, well, I'm not an English major. I'm actually really not... and I even said I don't even read that much. I said I read scripts, but I don't read many books. I used to, but not so much anymore. And I said, I'll give it a go. So she said, just try turning the prologue into prose. And I did that, and they really liked it. So then they commissioned me to write the whole book. But the thing was about the book, it gave me the opportunity to do what I didn't do with the play, which it was always about the mother. It was always the mother's story. So in the book, I go back to Vietnam, and there's a whole like thread in Vietnam and her adolescence and her experiences, which then, you know, affects her relationship with her daughter. This is in the book.
It sounds like it can go from a play to novel, now a screenplay.
Well, that's the hope, but I don't know. I don't know if there's an appetite for that. It's not because it's so what do you call it? It hasn't got a driving narrative, if you know what I mean.
Why is this stuff important for the British mainstream to consume? Is it important?
I think it's extremely important. I think it's extremely important to have stories from all different backgrounds and to have them seen as universal. So for me, it's always about relationships. So this is about a mother and daughter relationship, and anyone who reads it will be able to see that within themselves. And there is such an amazing strength that comes with just reading someone's experience from across the world, and it speaks to you. Like, I remember reading a novel about like a Russian, it was hilarious, about like Russian immigrants. And I just saw my own family. And I felt like, oh, I'm not alone. And, you know, and it's that, it's very much the only time I feel connected to the world outside of myself very much is when either I'm acting or I'm reading or I'm consuming something that is somehow touching my soul. I don't know, like parts of me that are not intellectual. You can't intellectualize it. You just feel it.
Was Summer Rose the first British play, Vietnamese British play?
I think it was definitely the first that had a full run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you feel the weight of that at the time? Did you feel like the gravitas, the important? I know, I'm not trying to make you feel like you're important to yourself.
I was shitting myself. Are we allowed to swear on this?
You are fucking allowed to swear.
Oh, great, great. I was literally like, I was so scared. I mean, I was scared every reading. I was scared every time I wrote things. I was scared all the time because you don't do that. You don't talk about things. You know, in fact, you don't talk about family stuff.
Wait. You don't talk about who is there? You? Are you talking about British people or are you talking about Vietnamese people?
I'm talking about Vietnamese and like the upbringing of, you know, of that, you know, it's not just Vietnamese, East Asian, I suppose, of like saving face or not
airing out our shit,
not airing out stuff and I'm sure I'm not the only one, and my family's not the only one, but like living under secrets, you know, that sort of feeling I grew up with. And here I was, through the power of drama, trying to tackle some of the things that I found hard when I was growing up, like not things that didn't sit right with me, you know. And I put them all in this play, not all of them, but I did it with as much love and like through the characters, and with as much honesty as I could, because that is drama and that is representation. Being able to put yourself on the stage, just like, you know, the majority white actors, you know, going through shit, doing terrible things, and then having to pay consequences or like anything like that, you know, doing, just being human, just being very fallible human beings, but also like trying to survive under certain circumstances. Like it shouldn't be something you're embarrassed about.
What was the difference between creating the play and then many years later getting to the novel, like more freedom, more liberation to kind of express more? I mean, what was the mindset difference between the two works?
Well, with writing a novel, you're by yourself. Whereas with a play, I had like, you know, you could take it somewhere and you could workshop it I think with the novel, it was a very lonely road. And I guess a lot of writers would say this. It was like facing myself every single day. And like the fears I had would come up every time I sat down to write, mostly because a lot of it was very emotional, you know, trying to put myself in this character's shoes and living through certain things. It's for me, because I suppose because I'm an actor, I write from that very emotional place. I put myself mm-hmm. in that space and feel my way through. So I think but then also there was that freedom of being able to go anywhere you wanted. Like I could go back to Vietnam. I didn't have to stay in the living room of a house. it was very daunting because of that, because you could go anywhere and it could be this epic. I had to shut all of the negative voices in my head, you know, all the comparisons, you know, that stuff. But that's really actually a really, really loud when you're Vietnamese of the diaspora, maybe. But it was really loud in my head and I had to turn it down a lot in order to write because I remember saying to my mum, because she had seen the play, and I remember saying to my mum, oh, mum, you know, someone's asked me to write the novel. And then she was like, someone can ask you, but whether you can do it or not is another matter. Oh, great.
Thanks for the vote of confidence, Mom.
Thanks for the vote of confidence. And it took me, they gave me a year and it took me 4.
Holy cow. At any moment, did you think that you were not going to be able to do it or finish it?
Yeah. So many. And then
that's scary.
I was one of those you know, inspirational books and podcasts like junkie, you know. I would you know, consume so much about procrastination and the creative process and all sorts of things. And I think I remember one saying, the hardest hurdle is when you're near the finish. It's the bit that gets really, really difficult, and that was where I was. And then it got more painful not to finish than to finish. So I finished.
Mm. When you look back on the whole process of like the play, the book, and then, you know, so you have all this experience of working through all this now, but I wonder about this all the time when an artist looks back and go, what could I have done differently? Is there anything that we can do differently? Or if right now you're given the same assignment, like you'd still be roughing it through the same shit that even if it's a different project at this point, knowing what you know, you'd still be dealing with the birth of the new baby, right? It's still the same pain. It's just a different child, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I actually, you know, I have no idea how I write anything. I sometimes go back and I read it and I'm like, did I write that?
Mm.
And this is when I know that, like, so I'm an actor-writer. I don't write all the time, right? I know writers write every single day, and it really works if you have that discipline, because you don't know what's going to come out. You never know.
Thing to do, where I said it's like having a new baby, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's this, that will be for every single thing.
Oh, you don't remember. You said you don't even remember writing it. You're like looking back and.
Yeah. I'm like, how did I write that? And I think that's how it's going to be, like, you know, for everything I write. I'm always surprised.
That is crazy. That's like crazy. Like, we're not even the person. We're not even. Yeah, you look back and you're like, who was that?
Yeah, well, if you give enough space between things, I mean, surely you've looked back on things that you've written. And you're like, did I write that?
Surely. I do not remember. I talk to other podcasters who have done hundreds like me. Nobody remembers anything. I don't remember.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Don't remember these conversations. There's so many of them. Yeah. There's so many that it's hard to remember. You know, obviously I'll remember, you know, Thuyen is from England. You know, she wrote Summer Rose. I'll remember those basic things, but the things that we got into, maybe like talking about your brother at the beginning of the episode, that I won't remember. You know, those things I won't remember until I look back at the episode. I'm like, wow, because these are not scripted things. You know, obviously I have like 15 questions for you, but they're like very pillar kind of questions that really kind of guide the conversation. But then when it goes off script, your brother, you know, there's no formula to that.
So, I don't see why that would be different with the conversation with the blank page, because it really is like a conversation. You're just doing it. You're just sort of having a conversation.
In our pre-interview, I think you had mentioned that you wanted to ask me some questions. So I just want to let you know that, right? You did mention something like that. So at any time, this is a dialogue between both of us. If you have any questions about me, feel free. You did ask, right?
Yeah,
asked me that. Okay.
Now you said it. I'm like, I can't think of a question. I want to know so much about you. I want to know about your whole life. You know, honestly, I want to like spend an evening having dinner with you, and you can tell me your whole life. But yeah,
we have some time now. I mean, I could tell you about my whole life, but I also want to know about your life too, as a British Vietnamese person. You know, I'm happy to share my life too, as a whatever questions you have. But you know, you have to know that people. Vietnamese Americans or Americans are very curious about British people. I am, at least.
I did not realize how small a community we have in comparison to not even just the US. I'm so I did a film.
France.
France. Germany. I did a feature film recently. Where this is the first feature in Germany, a German feature, where the lead cast are Vietnamese.
Wow.
Yeah.
You wrote it?
No, I was in it. I played one of the leading roles. I played the mother. And it was really interesting because it was same, but different. Because it's so linked to the history, you know, history of each country. So in Germany, because of East Germans linked to the Soviet and communist past, they had, you know, a lot of Vietnamese contract workers come to Germany. And so they have like, and who stayed after the wall came down. So they have like five times more Vietnamese in Germany than they do in Britain. And so they have more artists because a lot of it is to do with numbers.
Proportional.
Yeah. And so they have more artists, and it was just really, for me, very exciting to be in a feature film where the lead cast was Vietnamese, the director was German Vietnamese, and there were Vietnamese people behind the camera.
Vietnamese
makeup artists, Vietnamese, and I'm talking Vietnamese German Vietnamese people. You know,
the British Vietnamese are very rare. British Vietnamese artists are very rare.
Yeah,
because it's a proportional game. You know, and that's why the Vietnamese American entertainment industry is so powerful, because there's so many of us. There's so many.
Yeah, here it's just really, I was the first one. You know, I was the first one to like be.
To break out?
To break out, to be on the national stage, you know, the National Theatre stage. I was the first Vietnamese person, first Vietnamese to like on a lot of the stages in London. And I really didn't think about it. You know what I mean? So my mentors were South Asian. You know, I looked up to them. I saw their immigrant stories and I was like, wow, you can do this. And so I had two mentors who really championed me and helped me along the way. I mean, I wouldn't be where I was without people believing in me. Like,
mm-hmm.
No one gets where they are by themselves.
how close is the British Vietnamese creative community? How big is it? How like involved are the people, and how intimate are these members of your community?
I think there aren't that many, and it's definitely growing. There, people are intimate in little groups, and we are slowly coming together. So there's like the film industry, and then there's the theater, and then there's the visual arts, and then there's the arts, and then there's the poets, and we're kind of like scattered all over the place. And there isn't one, you know, there isn't a unifying thing yet, because everyone, I think it's also because everyone is struggling to do their thing, that no one really has the energy to bring it all together yet. I mean, that's why what you're doing with this podcast is so amazing. It brings people together.
I'm wondering why more people don't do what I do. It breaks my heart to think about it. Like, it really, really fucks with me.
I'm thinking about doing a podcast.
You have to.
How?
You have to.
How do I start?
I have an idea. Yeah.
What?
This is how you do it. This is how you do it. Okay. You just turn the camera on and hit record. That's all you do. And you save the file and you just put it on the YouTube.
That's it.
You put it on YouTube and that's it. It's much easier than writing. It's much easier than acting. It's much easier than making money. It's much easier than anything, cooking.
Just having conversations with people you want to have conversations with.
Yeah, I don't know why more people are not doing it. It really pains me. Here's why it pains me. It's a selfish thing. I want more lily pads to jump on in society. I want to have a lily pad, a few in Britain that I can jump on people's shows. Vietnamese, British Vietnamese. I want to go on to your shows. I want to be invited to Australian podcasts, Vietnamese Australian podcasts. I want to be invited to all these podcast shows. And there's nothing.
Okay.
There's nothing for me to be invited on.
Podcast, and I'm going to invite you on it, Kenneth.
Please. Hey, you know, and we could call it Twin and Twin for the episode that... Twin and Twin.
Twin and
for
Twin.
The episode that we do together. Twin and Twin. Yeah. I don't think you should waste another minute contemplating. I think you're a great conversationalist. Well, anybody I invite on the podcast, I think is... great conversationalists. Everybody, you know, every Vietnamese artist has something to say. These creatives and even business people and politicians, everybody has something to say.
Yeah.
I think everybody should have a podcast. I keep saying that year after year after year after year. And if anybody needs help with this, I will be there to like explain and consult, and I won't take a penny off of, I need a place to land too. I want to be invited onto shows to talk about different things that I want to talk about.
Shall I save my idea of my podcast? My podcast
what
idea?
Do you mean save it?
Oh, okay.
Well, what
if
you,
I save why, it why? Right here, then I have to do it.
you. In fact, yeah, you should be talking about why. Tell me why and what you would be talking about.
Well,
so then you have to do it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, no, absolutely. Because I would like to talk... Well, it was mostly, I'd like to talk to actors and creatives of color and their journey and the things that they have had to overcome, but also I want to be able to have conversations and people to sort of speak freely about things because so much of the time they can't because they're scared it might damage their career or relationships or whatever it is, but I want to be able to... You know, yeah, to have these open conversations so that it brings people together.
Okay, I'm going to break down the way to do this so that everybody can hear it.
Okay, great.
Invite 20 of your friends in the business of creativity or whatever. Just get 20 people. You might have to ask 30 people. 20 people will agree to it. Put it in an Excel spreadsheet. Put a date on when they've agreed to record. Do that. Set it up like the first person, like maybe a month from now, and then just line it all up. One or two a week and just line it all up. And then get Riverside FM, get a decent laptop camera for like $100 or whatever you're using right now works, and get a plug-in microphone into your computer and hit record, and you are off to the races. And out of the 20 or 30 that you recorded, take the best five and then start to upload those five onto YouTube. And you got a podcast.
There you go.
It's that simple.
It's that simple, right? I'm going to do it.
It's that simple. And don't worry about growing anything, the numbers. It will organically grow. I mean, as you know, as an artist, as a veteran artist, you know that everything takes time to blossom. And podcasts, whether you want to hide it from the world and silence it, it won't. Once you start to do it, it just starts to grow. And every podcaster I know has done very well. And I'm not talking about money, but I'm talking about what it brings to your own personal life. It's like you get to read a book about somebody's life in an hour and a half. And they're wonderful. And the byproduct of all this is creating communities.
Yeah.
And that is really the biggest beauty of podcasting to me. And then the money does come. I was just telling another content creator this morning that if you don't do it for the money and you do it for the love and it shows, the money comes, you know, sponsorship comes. I think brand deals start to come, lifestyle changes and decisions start to, it all shows up. But I think the anchor that needs to happen is that you are in love with people, that you want to be telling the stories of people in your community. My community happens to be Vietnamese people around the world. Yours is creatives. Yeah. Got to do it.
Yeah. Bringing creatives together, creatives of color together, because it is.
Yeah.
It is tough. And I think it's tough in here. It's tough in UK.
I think it's tough everywhere.
It's tough everywhere.
But then it doesn't become tough after you have a group of a community. What I've noticed is like once you got this like power of community together, nothing is tough because you can make phone calls to executives who are Vietnamese or executives who are in the, you just start making phone calls and you're like, wait a minute, it used to feel like it was tough 6 years ago. And then all of a sudden it's not tough anymore. It's like cutting butter with a hot knife now, you know, for me.
Does that mean, I was about to say, Kenneth, is your life more like butter?
Yeah, the tough part is now too many options.
Yeah.
Too many options, yeah. I remember wanting to be a producer for the longest time in my life, the film producer. And now the opportunities are here and I'm just like, it's podcasting. That's my life, you know? But I look at the producing opportunities that have showed up as a result of doing the podcast work and just being around the film business for a long time. I'm not a real producer. Like that's how it goes on in my mind, right? Like, I don't know what I'm doing, but I know what I'm doing in podcasting.
But is it something you want? Do you want to produce movies?
Not anymore. Not like the way I used to want it. Yeah. I used to want it so bad. But now as a podcaster, I'm just like so happy talking to friends and guests all day.
Your path has revealed itself to you.
Yes.
I think sometimes, you know, so like for me, you know, I'm still wondering, you know, I've gone back to acting because I love it. Yeah. So I've gone back to really concentrating on that area of my life, of my career. The writing, I think I feel like I don't know, it might be similar with you in the producing. I feel like I have a responsibility sometimes to write because there aren't enough writers.
Mm-hmm.
There aren't enough people writing the stories. There aren't enough of us, you know, and that really weighs on my shoulders. And so I know people want me to write, you know, there are opportunities for me to write, but it's, I don't know if it's the path, man.
We are multi-hyphenates and I don't know if, these answers are ever going to be concrete, revealed in a very solid way. I love to write. I love to cook. I love to sing and play music. I love piano and guitar.
Oh, yes,
I do all these things.
I heard you were a musician.
I love it all. I love it. Anything that makes my spirit fly, right? I love it. I love drinking. I love being around the campfire, sitting with a bunch of creatives. And I love telling stories around the campfire with my kids. And I love all of it, you know? But all of it really, when I think about, like, at the end of my life, when I die, I think I want my tombstone just to write, read podcast, right? Vietnamese podcaster.
Kenneth, right? Living your best life. It's amazing.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Wonderful. I congratulate you.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. And it's not even about like the success is about.
No, it's you found the thing that you love doing.
Yeah.
And not everyone gets that. Not everyone gets there.
Yeah, it's a privilege and a real honor to hear stories around the world from British Vietnamese people like you and global Vietnamese citizens. You know, it's a, and I know that there's all this like political polarization and there's all generational polarization and there's so much factions that are warring, but I think that's what makes it awesome too. That's what makes it beautiful as well. Because if there wasn't all that muck going on, I think it would be kind of boring. So I think,
yeah, I think the Vietnamese around the world share a real, I don't know, like a lot of soul, man.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, yeah, just a lot of depth, a lot of like, yeah, yeah.
What are we going to be expecting from you in the next few years in terms of books? Hang on, my mom. Mekanang podcast, man. May I?
I love it.
That is the first time it ever happened.
Because you sound like you don't sound like you're doing any work, Kenneth. That's what
it is. Oh my God, it's crazy. Oh my God, this is the first time it ever happened. Because I usually, this is crazy. I have a cousin that their mother just died, my aunt-in-law, my mom's in-law, and she just died. She's 85. And then so he's coming over to take my mom out to lunch and do funeral stuff.
Yes.
And so she's like, yeah, your cousin's here. This is recording, by the way. This is so funny. Yeah, my studio is upstairs and my mother lives with me. And she knows I'm always recording, but yeah, this is funny. I hope, I don't even know if my editor is going to cut this out or not, but that was hilarious. Why not? Why not keep it?
Right. Yeah. Keep it. Keep it. I love mothers.
Yeah. So what's next? What's next for you?
I just shot this feature called The Matriarch.
What a cool name.
Yeah, I play the matriarch. Yeah.
I cannot wait to watch this. When is it going to be done?
Huh?
Congratulations. When is it going to be done?
So it's very, very nearly done. It's in post at the moment. It's landed a world sales deal with someone. So they are going to be, which is going to be announced soon, and then they will be taking the reins in terms of its festivals and strategy.
Okay, so we're going to do this.
So
this is what we're going to do.
What are we going to do?
We're going to do this. When it comes out, wherever it comes out, especially if it comes to America, the US, we should get you back on the podcast. And if it does its world tour or if it shows up at the Viet Film Festival, wherever it shows up, if I'm
going, definitely going to show up at the Viet Film Festival, I will.
Then you reach out, and then if you actually fly to the US to LA or Orange County, then we will schedule an in-person interview and we will talk about The Matriarch, because that sounds cool.
You are going to love it. Well, I hope so. I think it's cool. I think it's cool.
I'm yeah.
It's a genre film. I think it's cool. Yeah.
Horror?
Thriller.
Thriller. Oh, can't wait. Yeah. So when it releases, let's get back on and then we can talk about The Matriarch and then we can talk more about the podcast that you'd had already started at that point.
Oh, yes.
That's going to be a few months, right?
That's going to be great. Yeah.
Line up 20 people, start recording them.
Have them in my head. I just need them to say yes.
Yeah, just reach out to them. And then so the next time we're going to talk, you'll have a podcast. And then we'll talk about your podcast and we'll talk about the new movie release.
Okay, fantastic.
Can we do that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Dwayne, it was such a pleasure. I really can't wait to talk to you again very soon about The Matriarch.
Kenneth, I want to come to LA and like sit and like listen to you play the guitar around a campfire and tell stories. And podcast that at the same time and produce your own show.
All in one night.
Yeah.
All in one night. Let's do it. Let's put that into the universe and let's do it. And congratulations with all of the success and the release of Summer Rose as a novel.
Yes. Oh, yes. It's coming out in the US on the 12th of May this year.
12th of May. You know, we try to do these interviews and talks. Knowing that there's this product that's like flying in the background, but we try to be as coy and as like smooth as possible. But we're here to promote Summer Rose, the novel coming out May 12th. You know, I think we did a pretty good job just kind of cruising along with the conversation and then hitting people at the end with the May 12th. It releases here.
I did not know that. It just came up.
You did not know what?
I didn't know.
You did not
know we were promoting anything. I thought you just wanted to chat to me.
Really? Well, let me tell you about the person that hooked us up. I mean,
who hooked us up?
Hang.
Oh, Hang. Oh, yes.
Hang is one that pushed it months ago. Yeah, and that's how I'm here.
Hang. You know, I'm really bad because you know how I feel about the like. How scared I am about the play and then how scared I was about the novel and the writing. I am equally scared of sharing it.
What?
Which is why I'm not very good at the whole promotion thing.
Whoa. Yeah, Hang was like pushing this. And then obviously, I'm busy with
helping me.
Yeah. And look, not to say that I did not know about what the work that you do, because Bao Nguyen, you know, told me about the work that you do. So like all these people were like, you got to get Duyen on and you have to talk to her about like all the work that she's done. So obviously there is a from inside of me internally. But really, I mean, we have to talk about promoting and, you know, because...
Yeah, I know. It's me. It's a thing that I need to... it's one of the things that the Year of the Fire Horse is is helping me. I am now, like I said to you, I think when we were having our first chat, it's like, I'm going to try and take over the world. I was mostly talking about I'm really trying hard to take my space. I'm really trying hard to own my, you know, talent really and know that I have it and that I can use it and share it and not be embarrassed. Like, I don't know why I'm embarrassed.
Yeah. I think that's a very human thing. It's not even a Vietnamese thing. It's not even a British thing or an Australian thing, tall poppy syndrome. It's none of that. I think it's just human nature.
Yeah.
It's a human nature. It feels, I mean, unless you're a narcissist, you know, and you're not a narcissist. I'm not a narcissist. But we have to put our professional hats on because I think the British and American parts of us require that we are fully capable of promoting ourselves. And I think it's important. And this is the time to do it with your new podcast, with your new novel.
Yeah.
I will be here to make sure that you feel comfortable about getting the word out. So May 12th, everybody, Summer Rose releases in the United States.
Thank you. It's such a pleasure, Kenneth.
Likewise. Thank you. Thank you for listening to The Vietnamese with Kenneth Nguyen. Special thanks to Brittany Tran, to Jane Nguyen, Catherine Nguyen, Tina Pham, Sydney Jamie, and Crystal Trinh. Please find us on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok at The Vietnamese Podcast.